Warning, the Michael Savage Show contains adult language, adult content, psychological nudity. Listener discretion is advised.
And now, America's most exciting radio talk show, The Savage Nation. Here is Michael Savage.
A once-in-a-half-century, probably once-in-a-century type of event. There's no question that this is in the process of outstripping anything I've seen, and it still is not resolved, and it still has a way to go. And indeed, it will continue to be a corrosive force until the price of homes in the United States stabilize.
I know Americans are concerned about the adjustments that are taking place in our financial markets. The White House and throughout my administration, we're focused on them. And we're working to reduce disruptions and minimize the impact of these financial market developments on the broader economy. I've been in close touch with Secretary Paulson throughout this weekend and this morning. I appreciate the work that the Treasury Department and the Federal Reserve and the Securities Exchange Commission and major financial institutions here and around the world are doing to promote stability in the financial systems.
Blue Monday, how are you, Blue Monday? Got to work, like a slave all day. He'll come to.
All right, this is Michael Savage. This is Black Monday for sure. And I have to say some things today that I'm reluctant to say. I wasn't supposed to be on the air. I'm just out of anesthesia or whatever they gave me only by a few hours. I had a little procedure today, as I told you, and I wasn't going to work today and tomorrow. They advised me against it. So if I slip up or make mistakes today, you'll have to forgive me. But I got to tell you this. Looking at what I see has happened now, I'm calling today a financial 9/11. I'm also saying that Bush came in shortly thereafter. There was a 9/11. We were attacked physically by terrorists on Wall Street and in Washington, D.C., the Pentagon. And it looks like as he leaves, he's giving us a financial meltdown. Now you say, why is Bush responsible? I'll get to that. But make no mistake about it, he's the president of the United States of America. George Bush permitted this to happen by deregulating Wall Street and letting the pirates go crazy. I think it was Karl Marx who said, if you give capitalists enough rope, eventually they will hang themselves by their own petard. Bush broke all regulatory policy, and as a result, we have this financial 9/11 today. You know, every time there's an accident in the world, whether it's a train crash or a plane crash, they usually look at pilot error. If it's not George Bush, who is it? Well, then it must be the head secretary of the Treasury, Henry Paulson, who caused or allowed this financial 9/11 to happen, in my opinion. Why do I say that? There's a lead article today from England, and only from England, in a Times UK that says the last men standing, Goldman Sachs and Morgan Stanley. Last men standing. Are you aware of the fact that our Treasury Secretary was former CEO of Goldman Sachs? How many months have I been warning you by what I've seen going on in this country? How many months have I said to you, this is a country of Goldman Sachs, by Goldman Sachs, and for Goldman Sachs? And you thought I was kidding. Well, I'm as kidding as much as Jonathan Swift was kidding in Gulliver's Travels. This is a country of Goldman Sachs, by Goldman Sachs, and for Goldman Sachs. I invite you to read the following articles, which I cannot summarize. They're all linked up on michaelsavage.com, and then I'm going to ask you five questions. The first headline says, Dow falls 500 points in worst day since 2001. That is why I'm calling today a financial 9/11. I'm also saying Bush came in on a 9/11 and is going out on a 9/15, but I'm reluctant to say that because he's not finished yet. 3 months ago, I said to you that George Bush has not yet done all the damage he's going to do to this country. And guess what? He's got 3 big months left. The next article says ladies' man McCain is a player in New York. Then layman CEO hubris contributed to the meltdown. That's correct. You got to understand something. There are men involved in this meltdown. Many of you don't understand that what has just happened is worse than what happened on in 1929. Why do I say such a rash thing? It's worse than what happened in 1929. Well, if you don't believe me, then why don't you listen to the opening speech that we played by Alan Greenspan, who said the U.S. is in a once-in-a-century financial crisis. So if we're in a once-in-a-century financial crisis, meaning greater than anything that's happened in the last 100 years, well, that takes us back to 1908. So it's greater than 1929. So if it's greater than 1929, why are we not hearing about it? So that leads me to another couple of questions here on the Savage Nation. And again, I have to ask your indulgence. And I'm not milking you for sympathy. Nobody I know would come out of even elective surgery on the medication I was on, where I had to be driven home, get up out of bed 30 minutes ago and do this show. But I have to do this show because I know the people. I've turned every channel on. I was watching CNBC since 4 o'clock in the morning, and they do a stupendous job. But there's one problem with CNBC. They will not name names. It's all a cozy old girls club. They will not call for an investigation because they know if they do, they would wind up losing their access to leaders on Wall Street. But make no mistake about it, it is the leaders of Wall Street, at least some of them, who must immediately be arrested and indicted and investigated. They must be. Why is nobody else in America but Michael Savage demanding a governmental investigation of what has happened on Wall Street? The question to you is, who should be indicted and tried for this debacle? Do you agree with Bush that you should be satisfied with Paulson and Bernanke? Now I'm going to remind you of something else. After Osama bin Laden attacked us on 9/11/2001, he said he did so because he attempted to destroy our economy, so he hit Wall Street. He wanted to hit our economy. What Osama bin Laden dreamed of doing in 2001 has now been done in 2008 by homegrown terrorists. But they didn't do it to destroy this country. Make no mistake about it. The greedy pirates of Wall Street did it strictly for serve their own purposes. The pirates of Wall Street who did this to this country, and make no mistake about it, you're not going to know the full ramifications for a long while. The pirates of Wall Street who did this to us have done more damage than Osama bin Laden did to our financial systems. Who did it? Why no calls for an investigation on any channel? What must we the people do to take our country back from these thieves? Why were limits on speculation withdrawn by George Bush in 2004? It was allowed, they were allowed to speculate at a number of 15 to 1 in certain financial instruments. Bush broke that off and said, now go to anything you want. They went to 70 to 1, the gangsters. Who benefited from this? Why no answers on why Paulson is not forced to step aside because of appearances of conflicts of interest? Let me repeat that again. I am not accusing Henry Paulson of a conflict of interest, but I will ask this question. If the Secretary of the Treasury is the former CEO of the last man standing on Wall Street, Goldman Sachs, do you not think that presents itself as a conflict of interest? Goldman Sachs and Morgan Stanley face questions, says the article. As the only two independent Wall Street brokerages standing, Goldman Sachs and Morgan Stanley will face a barrage of questions at their third quarter announcements this week. Some experts believe that in a climate of panic, in which clients, trading partners, and lenders are becoming increasingly wary of brokerages, it is only a matter of time before the two groups melt down or are snapped up. That's very interesting. Meltdown or snapped up. Well, I can't address what Goldman Sachs and Morgan Stanley are going to do, but I do know this. After Bear Stearns was broken up and destroyed by the pirates of Wall Street, and make no mistake about it, experts said that Bear Stearns was destroyed by Wall Street with a little help from their friends in government. After that happened, There were calls and grumblings about Goldman Sachs and Morgan Stanley, but that's been brushed aside. What about Chris Cox, the great genius of the Republican machine? Chris Cox, who was put in as the head of the SEC, why is he invisible? If you put a sheriff in charge of a town, a lawless town like Dodge City, and you bring in Wyatt Earp and Dodge City continues to shoot, and there's shooting and killing in Dodge City, what you do is you fire Wyatt Earp. Well, Chris Cox was the Wyatt Earp brought in to control the pistoleros of Wall Street. Instead, Chris Cox has gone and hid inside a bedroom somewhere, upstairs in a saloon, to continue the Western theme. I'll take your calls because I cannot believe that from 5 o'clock or 4 o'clock this morning, I have turned on show after show after show, radio show, TV show, and I hear morons talking about baseball games yesterday. I hear idiots in talk radio who should get up the next day and say I quit because I'm too stupid to cover what's going on in the world. I apologize for wasting the people's time. They should get up and say I apologize for wasting gullible, foolish people's time by talking about utter rubbish. There is no other story. This is Black Monday. Bush brought in 9/11 in the sense that he, when he entered politics, we had 9/11 shortly thereafter. And now as he's going out the door, we have 9/15. So today's show is called From 9/11 to 9/15, A Financial 9/11. It's a whodunit. It's a mystery story. So again, America, savage America, wake up, because this didn't happen by accident. This did not happen by accident. And oh yeah, one more thing. My timing is slightly off again, so forgive me again in advance. I can hear it in my voice. One other thing. I'm trying to remember what I thought of today that I think is worth sharing with you for you to think about. Somebody noticed that although the market went down 500 points, and of course Lehman Brothers bankrupt, we don't have to say that, the currency of the United States is quite strong, as are other currencies. Why was there no drastic selling of the dollar? Well, there are numerous reasons for that, but here's one for you that you won't read in the Wall Street Journal, owned by Fox News parent company, who fears to tread where it may in some ways step on toes that could have financial impacts. Here's one for the record book that maybe some geniuses out there will agree with or disagree with. Why would this happen? If the stock market took a 500-point loss, why has the dollar strengthened? Well, because markets are controlled and manipulated by a very few people. Very few people have the resources and the inside knowledge to manipulate whole markets, as was done over the last few months under George Bush's Wild West Wall Street, where all regulations were taken off, all regulators were sent home. So if a pirate makes several hundred million or several billion dollars in some of these drastic, dreadful maneuvers, he needs a currency to spend it. In other words, he doesn't want to go back to a bartering system. He doesn't want to start trading flour for gold or flour for wheat. He needs a currency system. So if a man made $500 billion or $700 million or $300 million or $2.5 billion manipulating markets, busting out companies, sucking out their assets, doesn't he need a currency to spend it with? And so therefore, the very same gangsters who busted out Wall Street are very careful not to short out the dollar and then bust out the entire structure of the economy because they'll be left with paper. You just heard that from Michael Savage. I'll be back. Savage. From 9/11 to 9/15, welcome back to Black Monday on the Savage Nation. It's a whodunit. It's a whodunit, and no one in so-called conservative talk radio is calling for an investigation, which is astonishing to me. And we, the people, must demand an immediate governmental investigation. Why were limits on speculation withdrawn in 2004 by George Bush? Where is Chris Cox? Most of you don't know who Chris Cox is. Head of the SEC? This happens under his watch, and he's not immediately a call before Congress for an investigation? Who benefited from this? Why no answers on why Paulson is not forced to step aside from Treasury because of appearances of conflicts of interest? I said appearances. We have a financial 9/11. What Osama bin Laden dreamed of doing in 01 has been done in 2008 by pirates on Wall Street. If you gave capitalists enough rope, they will hang themselves by their own petard, said Karl Marx. We are witnessing history. Barry in New York on WOR. Go ahead, please.
Michael, I have no words to thank you. But we, your listeners, who understand what's going on, we need you on the air, and we thank you for the sacrifices, and especially a day like today when you had surgery and we thought you were going to be off. You were like, who's going to tell us what's really going on? Who's going to be here for us? Michael, you're
You see, Barry, I can't tell you what's really going on, but I can ask the questions that may lead to us finding out what really happened. Although the power structure is so insulated from the people that we may as well be living in Tsarist Russia, where what occurs inside the Winter Palace stays inside the Winter Palace. The Tsar of Russia and the secrecy that surrounded the Tsar of Russia is about akin to what's going on in the United States financial capital today. Now, Barry, I want to say one other thing. You know, everybody goes in for these procedures. It's not a big deal, the colon thing. But the drugs are pretty powerful, a sedative and a this and a that. And you come out, you're in a twilight zone. And I've been in the twilight zone. I woke up about a half an hour to an hour ago, and I immediately said, I must get on that radio. I have to get me over to the studio because I can't let 9:15 go by without having the people call me. They must be freaking out there because no one's talking about it, Barry.
It's crazy. My 6-month-old was like, and then we opened the radio. It's like, he calmed down. It's your voice.
All right, Barry, thank you. I'm here for my – see, I'm here for the listeners who love me, not for the mocking fools who throw cabbage at everybody because they're jealous. I'm here only for my own audience. I don't care about it, anybody else. If you're a detractor or you don't like Michael Savage or I'm not conservative enough because I don't lick the boots of the Republican Party, you know what? Take it and shove it. Go listen to NPR for all I care. I'm not desperate for an audience. And don't you dare call me a great American. Save that for the phonies on the other stations. They're not great Americans. They're great con men. Put them in Duffy's Tavern with an apron and let them serve drinks in a bar. You'll get the same thing out of them as you get out of a bartender. And let me tell you something. I never met a bartender I didn't like. But I can't stand frauds in this media who pretend they're conservatives when they're nothing but puppets.
Savage.
Our economy in crisis. Only proven reformers John McCain and Sarah Palin can fix it. Tougher rules on Wall Street to protect your life savings. No special interest giveaways. Lower taxes to create new jobs. Offshore drilling to reduce gas prices. McCain, Palin. Leadership, experience for the change we need.
I'm John McCain, and I approve this message.
Well, I'll let that go unspoken. This is the Savage Nation. There are other news stories that have just come out. Washington Mutual has been reduced to junk bonds. Washington Mutual, Inc., the biggest U.S. savings and loan, has had its credit rating cut to junk by Standard & Poor's because of the deteriorating housing market. So we're watching the implosion of financial institutions unlike any in your lifetime. Many of you do remember your parents, perhaps. Or maybe by now it's your grandparents talking about the Great Depression of 1929. I don't know, and I have no way of gauging whether it's that bad. I don't know whether it's that bad or it's worse. I don't know how this is going to play out. I have fears as to how it could play out, but I have no real knowledge because there's probably only 3 or 4 people in the world who know how they want to play out this Monopoly game. We have no control over it. There are 3 or 4 people who did this to this country, and there are 3 or 4 people who have sustained the currency for the very same reasons. They robbed this money by busting out companies. Where are they going to spend the money? If they bust out all the financial systems and kill the currencies, the money will become worthless itself. Say, well, okay, they could put it into Deutschmarks, they could put it into euros, they could put it into other currencies. But if the U.S. dollar, if God forbid, got melted, the other currencies would also go under. And so, therefore, the pirates who've done this to Wall Street, and what's intriguing to me is that 6 months ago, you had five major investment banks that have been around a very long time. Five. Now there's two. One of which has produced three Treasury secretaries in a row for the United States of America. That's why I have not jokingly said, watch out, America. Watch out, America. Watch out, America. Like Lynkeus, the pilot seer of the Argonauts, I've been warning you that you cannot take a man from a major Wall Street firm and put him into the Treasury Department, take away all regulations and expect him not to behave the way he behaved in order to become the CEO of a major investment bank. Don't you understand it's in the nature of people? It's the scorpion and the frog. If you put a scorpion in charge of something, the scorpion's going to sting. It doesn't matter whether they're good or bad. It's irrelevant. It's their behavioral pattern. It doesn't alter. That's why I came in today, from 9/11 to 9/15. That's today's show. Bush came in, and strangely, a year later, we had 9/11. Not blaming him. I know who did it. 19 fellows from the Middle East. Now he's going out. And here we are on 9/15 in 08, and we have a financial 9/11. No calls for an investigation? No screaming in the streets? We want the heads of those who did it to us, who wiped us out, took out our pension funds? It's unheard of! Why is America not saying a word? Why are you silent? I will give you the answer. Because you are either drugged up, or you live on pornography, or entertainment, or sports. And consequently, you become nothing but an easily manipulated sheeple. America is filled with a drug pornography crazed nation of people, stupefied by celebrities who are worthless vermin. Sluts that belong in an insane asylum for nymphomaniacs are held up every day by the media moguls to throw skirts in your face. They blow their images in your face every day, so that's all you talk about, or some idiot sports. I turned on I was driving to the doctor early in the morning. I had one all news channel here in San Francisco. They were talking about a sporting event yesterday. I had a talk show with two goofballs laughing about something that they saw over the weekend, a TV show, two Heckle and Jekyll types, talking about it as though suddenly it's 1982 and that everyone wants to listen to their childish Beavis and Butthead humor. No mention of 9/11, no mention of 9/15, no mention of a financial 9/11, no requests to investigate who did Black Monday. So I was very upset that I was going to go under that thing, and I actually thought of not doing it, but I prepared, man, and you do one of these things, you don't want to walk away after 24 hours of purging yourself like this, the drastic purge. But again, it's nothing compared to real surgery, so I'm not complaining about that. But to come in on this, I feel my head clearing, I feel the fog lifting, and I'm glad to be with you on the Savage Nation. But this is a day that you will never forget as long as you live. If you do, then frankly, you don't even know what country you're living in or what year you're living in. The government media complex is the problem. That is why you hear no one like me on the radio ever. That is why I am castigated as an enemy of the people, when in fact, I may be the only major voice of the people in the media. Make no mistake about it. I may be the only consistent voice of the media. I know I complain too much on this show. I know I goof around a lot. And I don't apologize for it. That's a human being you're listening to. The script isn't written for me by anyone. No one tells me what to say and not to say. Ask people who know me and the kind of fights I've had when even people have suggested one word to me. I wouldn't do it. But it's not about me. It's about you. Why are you so quiet today? Why have there been no marches down on Wall Street? Do you know that the Lehman bankruptcy has hit the Florida state pension funds? And this is only the beginning. Did you know that? It's going to touch Florida state pension funds and the state-run insurer because both hold its securities. AIG, biggest insurer in the country. Now they're demanding a government bailout? Where did the money go? You say, well, there were bad investments made? Oh, really? Well, what about the executives? Did they have bad investments too when they took out $200-$400 million over the last 2 or 3 years? Who do you think pays for those corporate jets? Who do you think pays for those expensive ski houses in Colorado next to Dianne Feinstein? You do. The pirates took the money and they bought properties with it. And the government has an obligation to investigate. And if there is chicanery discovered, which there will be, that's assuming we can get anyone who could investigate who is independent. Their assets should be seized. Never mind. They're going to fire them. They got properties worth hundreds of millions of dollars or more. Take their values. Take their, their assets. So as I'm in, I just got to tell you one little stupid story. I'm in the thing, the prep room, whatever. They hook you up for the intravenous, for the set of sedation before they put the pipe in your keister to do the camera work. And I didn't know. I thought it was the size of a wire that was going to go inside me. I figured it would be the size of a wire with a little camera, like a mini camera. I take a look. It's the size of my thumb. I saw a black sheath that she was playing with on the table. I said, what's that? As I leaned over as the drug was going into me. I said, that whole thing is going into me? So she nods. She says, yes. I said, did anyone ever die in here from this procedure? So the doctor snapped his head around. She snapped her head around. They said, well, of course not. I said, I mean, die from pleasure. I said, it is San Francisco, after all. I know it's a bad joke. But when I woke up, here I am. It leaves you woozy. It leaves you woozy. So I live to fight another day. 3 weeks ago, I had the eye injury. I had a CAT scan in my brain, which I regret. But it turns out I have no tumor in my brain. There are no little right-wing devils dancing around in my brain. My brain is clear. My sinuses are clear. Today, I go in. They found one thing. They removed it. My guts are as clean as a 17-year-old. So my head is clear. My guts are clear. You know what that means? It means I, with God's will, I'm going to be on radio another 20 years. I'm going to be the last man standing in talk radio. How do you like that? I made up my mind. Whenever I make up my mind, I can do it. I have been floundering for almost a year now about whether I wanted to leave radio because I'm so depressed by the American people and by the government media complex. So I've been thinking about retiring, but a man like me can't retire. But I have a new will to live. I have a will to see all of my enemies disappear from the media. All of the has-beens will be gone on PBS. All of the Carterites will be gone. And I'm going to be here for you, and I'm glad that you're my audience. And now that we've talked about some of these things, all I can do is leave you with questions, and I'm not going to be here all day. I want to repeat the questions today. Who should be indicted and tried? Do you agree with Bush and that you should be satisfied with Henry Paulson of the Treasury Department? Why did Bush break all regulatory controls in 2004, permitting this kind of wild, insane speculation? Who done it? Why no calls for an investigation on anyone in the media? I saw it almost happen on CNBC. They're very smart, and they're very good, those people on CNBC. Most of them are. I particularly like Jim Cramer, by the way. I think he's great. But he was on the floor of the exchange early in the morning. It was like 5 o'clock here. I was getting up for this procedure. And I was watching them goof around. He was very close. When someone said, I'd like to hear the president say something, why hasn't he said anything? A whole weekend goes on, and where's Doofus? Where's Waldo all weekend? Why did our president not say anything over the weekend? And if you ask yourself this question, because no one's asked it yet, how come they were allowed to buy and sell stocks and trades over the weekend and you weren't? Were you able to buy Merrill Lynch shares over the weekend? Well, Bank of America was. They opened up the stock market for two friends? And they had a private trading session? Really? That's interesting. They had a private stock market session over the weekend, and the president had nothing to say. How is this possible? I've never seen anything like this in my life. It almost reminds me, when I saw Bush speak this morning, I was appalled at what he said. I was appalled at the tepid nature of his speech. I was appalled that he talked about some dictator from Africa that he pulled in on a string. Like who cared about this African despot that he was hosting there at a barbecue? I wanted to hear what he had to say about what he's going to do to stop this piracy on Wall Street. Like I'm reinstituting regulations. Like we're going to crack down. We're sending in 100 FBI agents. They're going to be pouring through the books. That's what I wanted to hear. I didn't hear that. Did you hear any of that today on Black Monday? We're sending 100 FBI agents into Wall Street. Now, maybe they're there. I kind of doubt it. They've got their hands pretty full, but maybe they're there. Maybe they're there already. I kind of doubt that, too. So I said, wait a minute. Something is off here. Something's off. There's no one screaming for an investigation. The president's giving us double talk. You know, Hartford, Connecticut. Chris, go ahead. You're on the Savage Nation.
Yes, Mr. Savage. I just got to say, once again, you're right.
I'm 27 years old, and I better get my cup out. Unless I can hit the lotto or something, I'll be begging for change because our government sold us out. And the people of America need to get a spine and fight back like you said before.
Well, here's the question that's really begging to be asked. Who's Black Monday going to benefit, McCain or Obama?
I'll tell you the truth.
That's the only question there is. Obama raised something like, what, $66 million last month? And I'm supposed to believe he's Robin Hood? Where did Obama get $66 million from last month? The little people again? I thought the little people are broke. How come the little people have unlimited funds for Obama? Could it be that there's a lot of little people who don't exist? Where is Obama getting these sums of money from? Who's giving him the money? Well, I guess he's a poor man, Obama, who rose up from his bootstraps because he was oppressed by this racist society, and he really didn't go to an elite private high school called Punahou in Hawaii, and he really didn't go to a great law school because he's such a genius. No. America's such a racist country that we held him down all his life. And he's really a Robin Hood who represents the poor, Obama. How does Robin Hood raise $66 million in a month? And $50 million the month before, and 40-some-odd million dollars the month before, and $40 million a month before, and 30-some-odd million a month before? Where is that money coming from? Could it be it's being bundled? Is it possible someone is behind him who we don't even know? Where's the money coming from? This is the Savage Nation, 1-800-449-8255. Please go to michaelsavage.com with me right now. I want to read you some of the headline stories. I'd also like you to take a look at psychological nudity. I'm as pretty harsh on myself in psychological nudity as I am on my show here with topics. Ladies' man McCain is a player in New York from the New York Post. Last man standing, Goldman Sachs and Morgan Stanley face questions from the London Independent. That's the best article on my website. They raise questions that none of the newspapers here will raise because of the interlocking corporate directorships between the newspaper ownership in this country and the brokerage houses. Lehman CEO's hubris contributed to meltdown. That's Richard Fuld, a name that will become very familiar to you. You know, it's interesting to me that not too many years ago, there were some pirates who were put away for shenanigans of mixing funds. I bet most of you don't remember those days. How come so many people went to jail 3-4 years ago, and today there's not even a discussion of investigating the pirates of Wall Street? Greenspan says that the U.S. is in a once-in-a-century financial crisis. So that means this could be greater than 1929. Does that mean you're going to be like your grandfather selling pencils on the street corner? Or lining up for government soup kitchens? Oh, I don't know. How do I know what's coming tomorrow? How do I know what's coming tomorrow when we have a government that is invisible and inscrutable like ancient mandarins in China? This is a secret government doing secretive things to the currency and to the markets for reasons only they understand, or worse yet, for greed, for greedy purposes, or a combination of the two. You know, you hear about these meltdowns and that people lost money and pension funds and the holders of the stock. Who made money on this? Who made money on this? I mean, I ask it again. Who profited from this meltdown of Lehman Brothers? Who's made fortunes? Who made billions? Who in America made billions of dollars on this? Who overseas made billions of dollars on this? Who made billions of dollars over the last day, 2 days, last week, 3 months? Who has profited to the tune of billions of dollars? The only person who could answer that would be the people inside the United States government who understand these things and know who made this money, because they have to report these things on their income tax. I'll be right back.
Savage.
I'd like to say welcome back to Black Monday. You know, maybe Fats can do a new song called Black Monday, because this is a Black Monday. From 9/11 to 9/15, a financial 9/11 has hit America. Who did it? Make believe you're reading a novel, and you read about an economic meltdown in another country. You read about people who were involved in it. 20, 30 years later, they're writing books saying, well, when the collapse of 1878 occurred, it occurred because J.P. Morgan did this. or Rockefeller did that. Now it's happening and suddenly no one did it? It happened by itself? Are you people crazy? Nobody's benefited from this? No one's profited from this? And you call that free market capitalism? You're insane. If you buy the notion that this is free market capitalism, you don't deserve a country. You deserve to live in a prison camp because you have the mind of a slave. Capitalism is not supposed to be piracy. Capitalism must be regulated or else you will have piracy, which is what we have now. George Bush deregulated the entire nation, particularly Wall Street. As a result, we've had this collapse. Make no mistake about it. After the collapse of 1929, regulations were put in to stop wild, insane speculation. You could not buy on margin anymore to the extent that it caused 1929. I learned that in high school. But you don't learn anything in high school except Johnny has two daddies. And then you take a drug since you're a year old. Then you take another at 15. Then you smoke dope and you don't know what's going on around you. Then you watch pornography. You're a slave. You're living like a slave. And if I have to be the only one here telling you what's going on, from my point of view, the best I can, then I will do so. Deregulation did this. Rampant, insane deregulation did this. New York City, WOR, Sal. Go ahead, please. You're on the Savage Nation.
Yes, Michael. I was telling your screener, you know how many heart attacks you just gave people right now by saying another 20 years?
Well, you know, you go in for these screening procedures, you could find out you have cancer also. You could find out you have very severe condition, and, you know, it changes your life. I came out telling me I have a clean bill of health. So my head's clear, my guts are clear. What's left now?
What I meant by it, people that don't like you. Could you imagine?
I know. I can't wait to see all of the people on the left crossing the River Styx where they belong. I'm going to send you a free copy of Psychological Nudity, Sal, if you can fire away one story in the book that you can't wait to get. Do you know any?
Oh, Louis the Monkey?
Bingo! You just win a free copy of Psychological Nudity on MichaelSavage.com. The special offer expires September 29th. It is my Savage Radio Stories. Buy it now.
Savage.
Warning. The Michael Savage Show contains adult language, adult content, psychological nudity. Listener discretion is advised.
And now, America's most exciting radio talk show, The Savage Nation. Here is Michael Savage.
You're listening to an encore broadcast of The Michael Savage Show.
The book that I know you've all been waiting for, Psychological Nudity, is the title. And here we are, 75 stories from Michael's colorful life history are contained in this limited first edition printing. And you can go to michaelsavage.com and you're going to see the picture of me holding Teddy, my dog. The classic stories I've told on the radio were translated for the written word. And I have to say translated for obvious reasons, because the spoken word and the written word are two different mediums. They're not the same. One Arm Frank, Love by the Sewer Plant, Dead Man's Pants, Savage's Childhood Diet, that's a prescription for a heart attack, Tippy the Dog Dies and is Thrown into a Garbage Truck, When Pasta Was Spaghetti, From Immigrant Son to Radio Stardom, and many more favorites are in this book, 75, by the way. Are there political stories? A few. The Medical Reason Why Liberalism is a Mental Disorder. Debunking Man-Induced Global Warming. Republicans Should Treat Voters Like Restaurant Customers. Psychological Nudity. It's a must for everyone who has read a Savage book. It's an original. Kindly go to michaelsavage.com, review the cover, click, and there it is, and I'll know how many you print. We're reeling from a horrendous story. A Mr. Aguilar stops his pickup truck, takes out his two-year-old infant son and starts bashing his head against the pavement, stomps the kid's head, and kicks the kid. Passerbys try to stop him. He beats them up. A cop arrives on a helicopter, tells him to stop, and has to shoot the guy. Now the cop is in trouble for firing the fatal shot because of the vermin in the media. You know, it's unfortunate that California will not allow trained, licensed people to carry concealed firearms, as is done legally in 42 of these other states of ours. Because maybe, just maybe, the first passerby could have killed this animal, and the baby would be alive, albeit injured. If only one armed person could have stopped this Mr. Aguilar, maybe the baby would be alive today. As someone said, you call for a cop and a pizza, and the pizza arrives sooner. Call for a cop and a pizza, and the pizza arrives sooner. Can you blame the cops for not arriving sooner with what goes on? A cop comes and sees a man bashing a two-year-old to death in a highway and has to shoot him, and now the cop's in trouble? Slams the toddler into the asphalt, stomps the baby on the head and kicks him because the child had demons. Demons. Mr. Aguilar said that the baby had demons. Took him all day to identify Mr. Sergio Aguilar, age 27. We still don't know if he's a citizen or not. No doubt he'll be deported back to his homeland if he isn't, and they'll say there's no death penalty there. I can't wait to hear the liberals with crying over his poor, the poor man who killed the baby and how the cop should be arrested for doing his job. I feel like playing music right now. There's nothing else to talk about. It's hot. I don't know what's going on. I don't know what's going on. Is it the drugs? Is it the godlessness? Is it the fact that our leaders are corrupt and devoid of any leadership qualities? That the society seems to be just coming apart? Is it the war in Iraq is finally having its toll on everybody? That this distant war and the murder and the fact that it's going on? What is behind all of this? I never saw things like this go on in my life. Who takes an infant and beats it to death like this on a roadside? And what newspaper would attack a policeman for shooting the man and put him in question? When would this have happened? When would this have happened? The headline is crazy. Police shoot and kill man is the headline. You hear this? This is, I swear to God, the lead of the story in Modesto B, where it happened. Police shoot, kill man who savagely beat toddler to death near Turlock. Now, you want to, you know, let's look at this headline. It's completely backwards. You know it should be the reverse. Police try to save toddler being beaten to death by man and shoot him. But I've warned you that the media is peopled by outright idiots and perverts who have everything upside down. I also told you that the eye that alters, alters all. That is why they think gay marriage is the same as straight marriage, if not better. That is why they attack police on a daily basis instead of the homicidal maniac. They put the police as the murderer. Don't you understand you're living through a madness that the media is promulgating on you? And that one of their own die, they make it as though the second coming is over? Everything is upside down because of the media. Everything. They're the problem. They're the problem in this country. It's the media. It's the media, stupid. Police shoot and kill man who savagely beat toddler to death near Turlock. Now, that's an insane headline. Whoever wrote it should be fired and put into a mental hospital. That's not the story. The story is a toddler is being beaten to death, and the police try to stop it by shooting the man. That's the same headline. But when you have these students on drugs who go to J school because they can't get a legitimate job, this is what you wind up with. Then they learn how to make a tie, and they're on television.
Savage.
Salt Lake City. Kevin, welcome. You're on the Savage Nation.
Hey, Dr. Savage. Just calling about the reporting on this poor child that was stomped to death in California and the reporting that the San Francisco Chronicle is doing on this. Five people stand around and watch a boy stomp to death for 7 minutes, and they excuse it, saying the inaction was justified. I don't know what is coming to with the mental
disorder. Well, they're saying that the people were paralyzed with fear at the illegal immigrant beating his two-year-old to death. Did they report in the story that he's an illegal immigrant? No, that they left out because the people are able to put two and two together and come up with four. It was another one of our wonderful visitors beating his child to death, but that's almost irrelevant. What's relevant is that apparently five people screamed, "Hey, hey, stop it. Hey, you shouldn't beat that infant to death." But nobody did anything is the point.
That's your liberal. Take a board and beat the man to death if he's stomping a child. I don't know.
All right, now, but here's the story. Tell me what would have happened if somebody was armed. Conceal and carry permit, and he sees a man beating a child to death, and he says stop, and the man doesn't stop, and he kills the man. Tell me what happens to that man with the conceal and carry.
He'd be arrested and drugged through the courts just like Chisani was.
The man would be arrested. He would be ruined. He'd lose everything he ever earned. And the family of the illegal immigrant would win everything the man owned. So don't blame the innocent bystanders. Blame the lawyers. Blame the courts. It's not the bystanders. They've crippled and paralyzed the country. Thanks for the call. Play Staying Alive by the Bee Gees. I see John Travolta with Bell Bottom doing disco in the aisles of a 747 with his friends from Scientology, meeting their God as they fly across the Earth's atmosphere, discoing into the next universe. I think I had one pair of bell bottoms. They made you feel so free, didn't they? Didn't they give you a sense of freedom? Those velvet bell bottoms. I don't know. I wish I could say what I really meant on this show, what needs to be done. Wish I could really let it out. One day, just open up the 12 cylinders inside my soul. Right now, I'm running on about 6, 7. If I could really pour gas down those cylinders, I could give you an action plan that would have you alerted, alive. You'd feel alive you haven't felt, like you haven't felt in 30 years. I could bring this country to a halt. I could change things in 2 days. But instead, I will just play disco music. Play it a little louder, please. Louder, louder. Picture all of the truckers. Picture every independent trucker in America blocking every tunnel and every bridge in America to say enough is enough to the Congress and the oil companies. Just envision that. You want to have a vision? Let's start with the basics. One day, one strike like in France where every independent trucker closes down every bridge and every tunnel in the United States of America. You want to see diesel prices go back under $5 a gallon? You want to see those liars and rats in Congress finally do something instead of pointing fingers at each other? You want to see the Seven Sister Oil Companies go to prison? Pay, play, 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 staying alive. Go ahead, play, staying alive. Play, staying alive. Go ahead. Go ahead. I'm not recommending this, of course. That's plan of action number one for today in the fantasy land of the Savage Nation. But we're just doing disco. Disco on the Savage Nation. Staying alive. Staying alive. But I have a dream. I have a dream that one day I'll awaken to every bridge and tunnel in America blocked by the independent truckers of America who say, up yours, Johnson. Up yours, Jack. You've jacked us up. You've killed us. You brought in drivers from Mexico. You've undermined us and killed us. Up yours, Jack. All you corporate CEOs, here's the middle finger from the truck driver. How's that for step one to take back America on the Savage Nation? Staying alive, staying alive. Staying alive, staying alive. Step number one, fantasy in the Savage Nation. A fantasy in the Savage Nation. We become France. France becomes us. The workers go on strike. The real workers, not the illegal alien workers. Strike for illegal things. No, the legitimate American truck driver. He blocks every bridge and every tunnel and every artery in America stops. The country comes to a halt. No food, no garbage, no fuel, nothing in, nothing out. Suddenly, the CEO crooks, the pirates in business suits, they can't do the two-step. Suddenly, the thieves and criminals in Congress who point fingers to deceive us can no longer do the two-step. I'll be right back. Keep on dreaming, Mike.
You're listening to an encore broadcast of The Michael Savage Show. are listening to an encore broadcast of the Michael Savage Show.
Tucson, Arizona. Todd, welcome to the Savage Nation.
Dr. Savage, I was hoping to brighten your day with a good story. I met a lady in the parking lot that was listening to
Hold it now.
Radio.
This is a family show, sir.
Oh, yeah. She was listening to your radio program, a little French immigrant lady. And yeah. I was listening to the fact she was listening to your program, and I looked at her and said, are you listening to Dr. Savage? And the look on her face was like I caught her stealing or something. She looked up as she turned the radio down, and she apologized to me, and I started laughing. I said, oh, no, ma'am. I said, I love Dr. Savage. He's great. And she got into some stories about her French culture and coming from France, and, I mean, the praises that she had for you and how accurate you were and the way you described, you know.
Now why did she turn the show off, do you think? Because, what, she was afraid you were a hater of the show?
More than likely. That's what I mean. She kind of had that embarrassed, like, you know, she got caught doing something she shouldn't have.
Well, she sounds like a nice lady, also very shy. And how did it end up? Okay, or someone pulled a gun out in the parking lot?
No. She was kind of woman you'd want to, you know, go have a drink with and chat.
Hold it now. As I said, it's a family show. We can't go there. Well, how old a woman was she, Todd?
Oh, she was probably in her, I'd say 70s.
But she was French, so therefore the rules still apply.
<Very good.
laughs> Hey, thanks for thinking of me. That's all. 1-800-449-8255. It's a light day. Play another Bobby Darin. You did it already beyond the sea. What else do we have for him? Of him.
Every night I hope.
Who's this? That's not Bobby Darin. This is Bobby Darin? I don't like it. I'm not into it. Let me hear something that reminds me of a 57 Chevy, two four-barrel carburetors, fins. Give me, like, I don't know. Give me Danny and the Juniors at the Hop. There you go. That's it. Give me something, a real throwback song. I want throwback. I want muscle car music. I don't want to hear about Senior Sins. Makes you want to get out in a convertible, doesn't it, and race around? All right, turn it off. We're having too much good feelings here on the Savage Nation. I've got to get the angst going in order to keep the audience listening. I got to get them angry, I suppose. But I may not be doing much more of it. I am so beyond anger. I am so beyond rage at the political machine. I am so beyond wanting to change the Democrat or Republican parties that I could care less. I become apathetic at this point. I may change. Don't call me and tell me not to be apathetic. It's the greatest crime. All right. I understand that. I may continue to talk about Filet of Soul and my dog for a while and the red brick buildings and how I can feel the semen in the brick. I mean, S-E-A-M-E-N, the semen in the brick. It was an area where the semen were waylaid over the years. They go into their bars, get you know, knockout drops. Next thing they'd be put on a ship somewhere. And I could feel this in this area, the Barbary Coast. You walk down these streets, it's filled with like art galleries, antique stores, a lot of lawyers for some reason. Thankfully, most of them went out of business in the last year, and the buildings are vacant. But they were formerly like little hotels for seamen and, you know, prostitutes, dance halls, that kind of thing here in San Francisco from the Gold Rush era. The buildings date to, like, you know, Civil War, post-Civil War period. I've always liked, even when I went to St. Louis, I'd go to the Gas Lamp District. If I went to Seattle 20 years ago, I'd always go to Old Town. I always liked Old Town. Old Town, Old Town. Whatever city I'm in, I go to the Old Town. Why is that? Like, when I went to Quebec when I was a youngster, I used to love Quebec because of the feeling of the old city. Of old Quebec, the paving stones, the Chateau Frontenac. I used to love shooting down that, what do they call that, where you go in like a sled, a toboggan run they had at the hotel. Wow. You get a bottle of brandy, you drink half of it, and you get in the toboggan. Before you know it, you're sailing along and you're having fun. What do you want me to do? Politics, food, music, science, poetry, global warming, how to care for children, vitamins, the care and feeding of children. As I say, anything you want me to talk about would be great. I think that the time for liberals and conservatives in this country to come together and defeat the Islamofascists before it's too late is really upon us. Unless the radical liberal comes to understand that his greatest enemy is not the conservative, but the Islamofascist who would stone him to death, cut his throat, this country is doomed because a house divided cannot stand.
You're listening to an encore broadcast of The Michael Savage Show.
To an encore broadcast of The Michael Savage Show.
Danny, on K-Dawn in Las Vegas, go ahead, please.
Michael, I'm dying over here to hear anything you say positive. I'm a fan, but I think you're becoming a chronic pessimist.
Wait a minute. Is it illegal to be a pessimist?
We're not talking about law. We're talking about an entertainment show with information. I'm referring people to you, too, that I've referred.
Oh, well, excuse me. What do you want me to do? Perform for you?
Mike?
Well, what do you want me to do? Get a string that you can pull from Las Vegas?
Mike, a little bit of positive. That's all.
All right. Why don't you give me something positive? Go ahead. You give me something positive. Some nice optimistic music for you out there to keep all your Republicans happy. Can do. Put your mind to it. Put your shoulder to the grind. Put your shoulder to the wheel. Make up your mind. You can win. You're a winner. No negative. Be positive. Think positive. Only positive music and positive news. Everything's good. Everything's coming up roses. Bush is not a liberal. Bush is a conservative. John McCain is a good conservative. Be positive. Turn it off. You know, the thing I'll do is I'll rewrite the Bible. I'll call it the Newly Revised Optimist Bible, because if you read the Bible, it's really very negative. Take Jeremiah. You know, Jeremiah, it should be illegal to read Jeremiah in America because it's so negative. It's not positive. It's not optimistic. For example, says, for of old time I have broken the yoke and burst the bands, and you said I will not transgress, but upon every hill and under every leafy tree, you reclined playing the harlot. Now, that should not be allowed in the new Republican America. The new Republicrat America should revise the Bible, change Jeremiah, and it should say, upon every high hill and under every leafy tree, you did recline playing the clown. And then the next passage says, yet I had planted thee a noble vine, holy a right seed. How then art thou turned into the degenerate plant? No good. That gets people in Las Vegas unhappy. So we're going to revise that into a newly revised Optimist Bible. And the phrase in Jeremiah will now say, I had planted thee a noble vine, holy a right seed. How then art thou turned into the happy clown? See, this way everybody will be much happier. We have the can-do spirit here in America. We have to think Ronald Reagan. We have to think pioneers. We have to think cowboys and Indians. We have to think conquering Hitler. We must never allow a negative thought in our mind because it's very, very bad for the economy. We must be positive. Arbeit macht frei. Every morning, go to work and say to yourself, work makes you free. That's what we need, is positive. Positive. Positive, I say. We're going to outlaw negativity in America. That's right, in the new America. Negativity will be outlawed, and the Old Testament, particularly Jeremiah, will be burned because it is oh so negative. No Isaiah, no Jeremiah, no Judges, no Ecclesiastes, no Numbers, no Leviticus, no Exodus. Too negative, I say. Out with thee, out with thee. Okay, I'll be positive. People have requested that I be positive. I guess I try to be positive. I don't know how to be positive. Well, okay, let's start with this. This morning when I was making tea, I said to myself, your one mistake in 2007 was that you forgot to be thankful to God for all the gifts that you have been given. That's hard for me because I fundamentally am not that kind of guy who gets up and I say every morning, thank God for what I have. I should. I admit that. So I said, if you could wake up every day and say, you know what, look at what you have. See, I personally don't want anything. Let me start with me. I don't want any more success. I don't need another bestseller. I'm not boasting now. Please don't take it the wrong way. I don't want anything right now for myself. That's not what's making me unhappy. I'm not like resentful. I'm not like unhappy that I don't have this or I don't have that. I don't want anything. All I am asking, first of all, I wanted to say thank you for giving me what I give, because I told you how this happened. I don't want to go, it sounds hokey. Things had gone really, really, really wrong for me 15 years ago, no matter what I did. Everything went wrong in my life. I mean, in terms of career-wise. There was no one. I was like a wildcatter. I had turned it into a family joke. I said to myself, you know what? I'm like a wildcatter who keeps drilling for wells and keeps coming up with dry holes. I said, but don't accuse me of ever having stopped throwing down those, you know, drilling. I drilled 1,000 wells and they wouldn't come up because the cards were stacked against me. Because I wasn't the right race. You get it? So anyway, but the long story is I made a prayer. I said to God, please, God, I've worked so hard. I can't take it anymore. I don't even want to tell you. I was 50 years old and I had almost tapped out. I was ready to tap out and check out. I couldn't take it anymore, because no matter which way I turned, they said white males need not apply. I got to tell you, on the MS, that's what I'm telling you. That's the way it was. Everything was like that. So then I made the tapes and I said, God, please just give me a living. That's all I ask you for. I don't want to win the lottery. I said, oh, please give me a living. I've tried so hard. I've done so many good things. Why are you doing this to me? And then when I stopped saying, why are you doing this to me, and said, only please give me a living, radio came along. Now, here's the interesting thing. It didn't come to me like in a lottery winning. You ask anybody who knows me going back to the first radio show. I have had to crawl on broken glass. I had to walk through fire. I had to jump hurdles in order to get where I am. Everyone knows that. And in order to keep this thing alive called the Savage Nation, it's an enormous, enormous challenge to do this correctly or as best as you can every day. 3 hours a day, like clockwork. Get up every day and train for it, run for it, eat for it, sleep for it, plan for it. Because if you miss that curtain call or you get into the wrong state of mind by the time that 06 hits, you're out of business, kiddo. This business is a business that you can die with one wrong sentence, as you well know, with all of the left-wing fascists out there trying to trip you up, because we no longer live in the land of the free and the home of the brave. We live in a different country today. We live in a totally different Soviet-style America. But I'm up for the task. I'll bury them before they bury me. I will put them in an orange jumpsuit before they put me in one. I will get them out of business before they get me out of business. I can guarantee you. I can guarantee you. People have left the political arena who you thought would be around forever, and I told you they wouldn't be around. People have left this campaign who I knew didn't stand a chance in you-know-where to get anywhere. And I knew they were doing it just for the publicity. They're gone. They're gone, not with the wind. They're gone like dust in the wind. What I'm saying to you is there's a lot to be thankful for. But when God answers your prayers, whatever they may be, it often comes with a burden. It's not the lottery. You don't get X, you know, millions of dollars a year for nothing. You got to work it. You got to give back. So that's the whole message that I got to remember is give back. So I want to go through one more thing. I don't know where this soul searching has come from. I had reached a point in my radio career where, let's say, I was contemplating leaving radio at the end, let's say at the end of the year, when this year is over, 08. I had been seriously thinking about it for a long time now, because there's only so many years anybody wants to do anything. And I feel I've done what I wanted to do. I've written 4 books now, 4 in a row, New York Times bestsellers. That's a heck of an achievement. I got to tell you, I don't care who you are. I don't care what you try to do. You try to do even one bestseller. I did 4 in a row. That's like 4 Babe Ruth kind of things for a guy like me. So what more do I need? What more do I want? I say to myself, the family is okay. The kids are okay. They don't need me. I'm not working for anybody. Everybody's doing well enough to get through life. Whatever years I may have left, I said to myself, what do I want to do with the years that remain? So I was contemplating this for the last This is 9 months now. What do I really want to do? So I contemplate what people normally do when they retire. Unfortunately, I'm an inner-city kid. I always have been in my heart. I don't golf. I don't play tennis. I don't knock people who do. The sports never appealed to me, that kind of thing. I found that they were too distant. They were too slow for me. I'm not saying the great skill it takes. It's just not for me. Okay, let's leave it at that. So what kind of sports do I like? What am I going to do, go boating 7 days a week? Like a yucca puck with a captain's hat? I'm going to ride around tooting my horn with a dog? What kind of life is that? I'm going to travel? I've done more traveling than any human being should ever want to do. I did it when I was young. I've been a lot of places. I've done a lot of things, but I didn't just travel for travel's sake. I traveled to collect medicinal plants. The collections unto themselves are worthy of a life's work. They were put into herbaria all over the world. Unto itself, I never talk about that. Is it as good as Jonas Salk inventing the polio vaccine? No, but it's a significant little step in science that I made. What I'm saying is I could do that. I could go back to collecting plants as a hobby. But I said, I don't really want to do that anymore. I did it. I don't want that isolation and loneliness on islands anymore, sitting alone on islands with people I don't really understand and in villages every night. You ask anyone who's actually really done it, there's no romanticism involved. It's very, very difficult, and it's very soul-wrenching to sit in a strange village on a straw mat at night, night after night. It's not a lot of fun. When you're young, maybe you can imagine it's kind of a romantic thing to do, but when you are at a different point in your life, there's no romance in it. So the point I'm making, in a long story short, is that there was nothing that I really wanted to do outside of what I have been doing for these last 15 years, and that is look at the political machine as it goes by, watch America as it goes by, and try to make a difference. Now, am I imagining that I've made a difference? No, I'll tell you, we've had some real victories. For that little film critic with the insignificant show with no ratings who thinks that the conservative movement is dead, let me remind the little film critic that this show stopped a Dubai port steal. Does that mean the conservative movement is dead, Mr. Film Critic? This little show stopped the illegal immigration amnesty bill. We stopped it dead in its tracks. Not just this show, but this was the pounding drum of the anti-illegal immigration amnesty movement. Did you hear what I just said to you? We've had two or three really big victories on this radio show. And what I'm saying to you is there are other things we might be able to do, both negative and positive, to save this country, to put it back on its course, to pray to God that somebody comes along who is worthy of the title president. It's possible this little show could have some influence on that. You say, well, are you being a megalomaniac? What influence can you have? Nobody ever refers to you. You don't exist, Michael. Well, go on to michaelsavage.com and take a look at the 49 million people who have voted on my website, and I can guarantee you that the listeners to this show will determine the outcome of the next election. I can guarantee it. And I didn't pick anybody yet, and I don't intend to, but I can guarantee you that the listeners will pick the next president of the United States of America. And I'm not even sure that that person is yet on the ballot. I'm not sure that that person has yet come forward. It's possible there's a person who has not yet come forward who will appear and who will tell America exactly what they want to hear, because that's what the American people are screaming, clamoring, praying, and dreaming for. And the people will rally around them like metal filings around a magnet. That's what's going to happen, maybe. And so therefore, there are things we can do. And that's why I'm still in radio, because I feel that I can still make a difference. And that, ladies and gentlemen, is where I find myself today. Does that answer some questions? I really didn't plan on this, you know, soul-searching exposure today, but that's it. But this is good for the earth. The earth needs this. The earth loves this. The ground is speaking to me. Every plant and every bird is saying, thank you, God, for again opening up the heavens.
You're listening to an encore broadcast of The Michael Savage Show.
Savage.
You're listening to an encore broadcast of The Michael Savage Show.
Politicians are so full of crap. Here in San Francisco, for example, they banned plastic bags in supermarkets. They said it's bad for the environment because the plastic bags don't deteriorate or disintegrate. They sit in the landfill for thousands of years. They're very concerned about the environment in San Francisco, as I say. So now you have to have a paper bag when you leave a grocery store. And if you're walking out in the rain, it doesn't matter to the city of transsexuals who run the city. The paper bag, of course, disintegrates in the rain and your groceries get wet. The plastic was much better and much more convenient. But let's take it on the face of it. So plastic is not biodegradable, right? Then how come they distribute condoms in San Francisco like M&Ms? Isn't that made of a plastic? You're telling me that the condoms that are so popular with the city transsexuals don't sit in landfills for 20,000 years? You see the hypocrisy and stupidity? Or they tell us that the salmon population is dying out, that the salmon here, we're supposed to worry about, that the salmon are not breeding. We don't read that the people are not breeding, only that the salmon are not breeding. So now they're going to spend hundreds of millions of dollars. Record low number of salmon reaching Central Valley could mean severe fishing restrictions. And then they try to analyze why the spawning, the number of salmon that are spawning, has decreased. Nobody will say that perhaps the toxic garbage that is dumped offshore in San Francisco is poisoning the oceans. Nobody will say that the hospital waste and the other untreated sewage that goes out into the ocean is so toxic that it's killing the fisheries off the coast of California. Oh, no. Instead, they'll tell you to cut out plastic bags in the supermarket. I'm going to prove something to you right now. This is a daring act I'm about to perform, which is I'm going to read the label on a box of bullets, 380 auto, 90 grain bullets, and I'm going to show you that I can even make that interesting, even the people who don't have guns. I'm going to read you something, right? Lead warning. Discharging firearms in poorly ventilated areas, cleaning firearms, or handling ammunition may result in exposure to lead and other substances known to cause birth defects and reproductive harm. Well, you know, a bullet can also cure a birth defect, to be honest with you, when you think about it. Why it's in English and French, I don't understand. Why would they make a bullet box in French and English? That's the part I can't understand. The French haven't used guns in 100 years. How many Frenchmen would buy centerfire cartridges? I don't. There's a warning here for children on the box. French, they're not allowed to have guns in France, are they? So why would they even make this in French? I don't understand this. It's like a cheap centerfire cartridge, maybe. That it could be in Louisiana or something that they speak French, don't they, down in there in the bayou? I mean, no slur intended. 380 is a terrible round, by the way, for home defense. I don't think it'll work. Everyone says, oh, it's not going to work. God, I wouldn't want to be hit by one. Guys always say, oh, don't get a 380, get a 40. Man, I don't want that thing going through me. What's wrong with the 380? Like a 32 is not good enough. Oh, okay, fine. I'll just shoot it through my splinter. It's not big enough. I'm into the 45. I mean, you want your stopping power. I mean, in the case of a home defense weapon, let me tell you something, size matters when it comes to the cartridge. You know, I mean, let's not fool around here. You got a guy coming in on PCP. You want something that'll knock him down. And it's got to be a 45. I don't care how big he is. I don't care what drug he's on. That's what it was designed for by the U.S. government. When they were in the Spanish campaign, the Philippines campaign, the Spanish-American War, wasn't it? And they were having, you know, this is an interesting thing historically, because I've studied this occasionally and only on a mild note, on a minor note. But apparently, weren't they fighting Muslim separatists in the Philippines during the Spanish-American War as well, if I remember correctly? And weren't these fanatics using some kind of drugs in the jungles there? And they'd come screaming at the U.S. Marines, and no matter what they shot them with, the 38s, they'd keep coming with their machetes or bolo knives. So they went back and they said to the ballistics laboratory, develop a slug that'll stop them no matter what they're on. They came up with the 45. That was the development of the origin of development of the 45. You understand that? A straighter gun. There is. I mean, that gun shoots straight. Real men. You remember that one? Real men. What was the one I said, Beowulf? Real men don't what? Early effort. Yeah, real. We can talk about guns, beer, wine, guns, cameras, ammunition. I'd rather avoid politics for a few moments. And remember, not truffles. The only topic I don't want to talk about is truffles. Conservatives do not eat truffles. Real men do not eat truffles. Houston, Texas. Russell, quickly, fire away. You own a Duffy boat. Tell me about it. Do you like it?
The great thing about it is when you're just putting around the harbor or in and out of a network of canals, there's no fumes. You know,
that's what I want. No fumes. I hate fumes.
You're listening to an encore broadcast of The Michael Savage Show. Michael Savage Show contains adult language, adult content, psychological nudity. Listener discretion is advised.
And now, America's most exciting radio talk show, The Savage Nation. Here is Michael Savage.
You're listening to an encore broadcast of The Michael Savage Show.
The book that I know you've all been waiting for, Psychological Nudity, is the title. And here we are, 75 stories from Michael's colorful life history are contained in this limited first edition printing. And you can go to michaelsavage.com and you're going to see the picture of me holding Teddy, my dog. The classic stories I've told on the radio were translated for the written word. And I have to say translated for obvious reasons, because the spoken word and the written word are two different mediums. They're not the same. One Arm Frank, Love by the Sewer Plant, Dead Man's Pants, Savage's Childhood Diet, that's a prescription for a heart attack, Tippy the Dog Dies and is Thrown into a Garbage Truck, When Pasta Was Spaghetti, From Immigrant Son to Radio Stardom, and many more favorites are in this book, 75, by the way. Are there political stories? A few. The medical reason why liberalism is a mental disorder. Debunking man-induced global warming. Republicans should treat voters like restaurant customers. Psychological nudity. It's a must for everyone who's read a Savage book. It's an original. Kindly go to michaelsavage.com, review the cover, click, and there it is, and I'll know how many you print. I feel like I'm under siege in a bunker listening to this every day. I'm in a sweat. My dog is nervous. The dog is sick of throwing up from the tension. I know dogs pick it up from owners. He doesn't eat. He's moping around. His hair is matted. I'm trying to do the best I can for him. I don't know what it is. I think it's the politics of the day. Gas is through the ceiling. Maybe the dog's nervous when he sees me go to the gas station, and it looks like I just lost at Las Vegas. I fill the tank. Okay, thank you. It's $109. You know, I feel as though I'm in a bad movie from France from the 1950s where I'm paying in old francs by the liter. That's what it looks like. The thing just spins around like a roulette, around and around. And then where's this going to end? A government's supposed to rein in an industry that has a monopoly, isn't it? Never mind what the golfer says to you. This guy's a straight-up mouthpiece for the oil industry and for the Bush administration and Republicans in general. Free market. How can you have a free market, Rush, when there's a monopoly? What are you talking about? If you don't like what the Seven Sisters do? You go drill your own well? What are you, crazy? You people buy into that rubbish? It's no free market. It's a monopoly. A government's supposed to stop monopolies. The oil companies are a monopoly. OPEC is a monopoly. Make no mistake about it. And we do have options. We could go on to a crash program right now. Again, they're not asking them, one of the smartest men in the world, what the solution is. Oil for illegals. Make Mexico pump the oil, and we could take it from Mexico one barrel per illegal, per day. That's 20 to 30 million barrels of oil to pay for the huge social costs of the illegal aliens. It's irrespective of whether you are for or against illegal immigration. I don't know how anybody could be for it unless they're benefiting from the cheap labor. Okay? No sovereign nation on earth has ever permitted this kind of influx, this kind of invasion. No country on earth has ever permitted it that is still standing. The only time this kind of invasion has occurred is after a war, when the country loses. They let 30 million people from another country come in and reproduce and become citizens. That's after they lost the war. But with politicians like we have, we don't have to lose a war. You want oil? Mexico's swimming in oil. You don't have to pump it in around the Straits of Hormuz. You don't need an aircraft carrier, battle fleet to protect it. You could truck it over the border. okay, instead of trucking in the other stuff. Instead of, you know, I mean, I'd have to speak in code here, like the white and the black. Instead of trucking in the white, truck in the black. Okay, you know where that's coming from? Put that on your superhighway right to Texaco's gas station. Get the oil to the refineries. Get thee to a refinery, if you don't mind. Number two in the crash program, drill in Anwar. Anyone doesn't want you drilling in Anwar, arrest them. It's a national emergency. Period, end of story. The Caribou will thank you. I remember when the Alaskan pipeline was being built in the early 70s, this same hysterical nonsense about it'll kill the caribou. Their migration patterns require that they migrate across these vast, pristine regions of Alaska. And if you build the pipeline above ground to pump that hot, disgusting oil out of the earth of Alaska, you will disrupt the migratory patterns of the caribou. Well, actually, if you have studied this recently, you'll find out that the caribou, meaning the moose, they love the pipeline because it's warm. And they never really wanted to live up there because of global cooling, they had to grow a lot of fur and adapt to the cold. They probably originally were deer. Then global cooling hit, and those who could live had longer fur. And then they mated. The ones with the long fur mated with the other guys with long fur. The girls, remember that baby with long fur, the woman with the short fur died, survival of the fittest. Now we are a millennia later, and we have moose. And the moose don't really like the cold. They actually would rather live in Florida. But they had no choice about it. The world changed underneath their tusks. So, I mean, underneath their antlers. So what you have now is caribou who really would rather be around warm. So they actually congregate around the Alaskan oil pipeline that we were told would kill them and disrupt their migratory patterns. In fact, they like to reproduce under the heat, man. Ask yourself a question. Where would you rather do it, in the snow or under a hot pipeline? So the same with the caribou. They're not stupid. Guy wants to get down with his old lady moose. He's going to do it around something in a warm place. So where's he going to go to do that? The pipeline. So we've actually created a larger population of caribou as a result of this oil pipeline running through Alaska. I'm telling you, see, I have a great memory for the big things. You understand what I just said to you? Do you have that or not? Do you get that picture? So what I'm saying to you is that's why drilling in Anwar now makes sense. Because with slant drilling, it would affect very little of the so-called pristine environment. And by the way, most of the people who are in favor of the environment never go to the environment. I actually do. And I'm actually a real conservationist, and I've really done things for the conservation movement over the last 30 or 40 years. They've done nothing but collect big checks and go to dinners. But I don't want to, you know, put another halo around my halo here. What I want to tell you is that I'm giving you a program, oil from Mexico. You want to lower gas prices? You want to go on to a crash program like immediately, like the Marshall Plan, because this is war? This is a war against our economy by OPEC and the oil giants. And because Bush is an oil president, we're seeing the most egregious profiteering in the history of the world going on not only from the oil cartel, but also on Wall Street, because there's no controls whatsoever. He put a shadow of a policeman in the SEC called Chris Cox, another great Republican from Orange County, Christopher Cox, Harvard, the white knight. He waited all his life to get that appointment, left Congress and went to the SEC. And under his watch, there's the greatest crime of the last 150 years has occurred, the greatest crimes, the bust out of Bear Stearns, et cetera, et cetera. Huge fortunes were made and lost. People lost their houses, subprime meltdown. And Chris Cox is sitting there doing nothing. Republican from Orange County. Great, great, great appointment, Mr. Bush. In a sane world, the guy would be not only thrown out of his job, he'd be investigated. By the way, in my opinion, it's only one man's opinion. I never met Mr. Cox, but I know he's above the law. Absolutely. I mean, he's clean as a whistle, a Boy Scout. So that's number two. Number one, we drill in Anwar. Number one, oil from Mexico, oil for illegals. We get it for free. To pay for the hospitalization, medication, and schooling. They don't want to give it to us. We send in the 82nd Airborne and we take it, like in the good old days. We become a country again instead of a patsy that they suck everything out of us and we get nothing back. Take it from them instead. That's number one, oil from Mexico for the social cost of the illegal alien invasion. Two, number two, drill in Anwar. It'll take 6 to 7 years, I think, to see a drop of oil. I don't know how long it'll take. They have to drill much deeper because they have to go on the angle. Drill in Anwar. Number three, immediately start pumping oil out of Iraq. That's yesterday. The oil is there, Jackson. You start pumping it. You put it on ships. You protect it with the American fleet that's doing zilch, nothing but training right now. And I'm sick of training, burning up gas with training. Okay? Get the oil out of Iraq. Get it over here. Get it into the refineries. Immediately get it in line. That's number three. And I can guarantee you in a very short period of time, oil will come down from the $4 or $5 a gallon back to $2, $2.50. Now, why do you not hear this on ABC, CBS, NBC? Fair and balanced, it's Fox News. Why don't you hear it on any of those stations? Because they're all tied into the same beltway garb. They're shrouded with the same garb as all of them are. They pretend they're different than each other. Now, you ask yourself a question. I'm going to have you ask yourself a question. I'm going to give you a savage question. NBC News has a ratings for the week of 8 million listeners. ABC News has a ratings for the week of 7.7 million. And Katie Coran Couric, who we told you would fail, even though the morons paid her $15 million, I knew she was a flop before she began, had a listenership, a listenership of 5 million for the week. For the week? How is it that I, an unknown man who's never invited on a radio show, television show, never written about in a newspaper, has a listenership of at least 8 to 10 million a week, according to Talkers Magazine? That's at least, I know it's higher than that, at least that number. Why are people listening to my show? Precisely because of what you just heard, because I have ideas, valid ideas, that you will never hear on ABC, CBS, NBC, or Fox News. I didn't say they're bad at what they do. They're bad at disseminating their view of world events, but they're not good at giving you any solutions or ideas. I am different in that regard. And these ideas are so threatening to the establishment of which they are a part that they will not project these ideas. Now, how do you think a guy like the Leprechaun, and the guy's all over the map politically, that he's entitled to be a chameleon? There is nothing wrong with being a leprechaun, and I've said that before. That doesn't mean they're bad people. It's just the way they are.
Yeah. You're listening to an encore broadcast of The Michael Savage Show. Listening to an encore broadcast of The Michael Savage Show.
I had such a bad experience on takeout last night. I have to tell you about it. I like restaurants. Don't get me wrong. I will go back to them. But right now, I'm not going to many. So actually, tonight, I'm going to go to one. So I did takeout last. It was a very hot night. And you don't want to eat. So I wait till it's dark to eat. Now it's too late to do it. So takeout. I call it in and I say to her, okay, I want the frutti di mare, the pasta. I've done this many times at this place. I want no clams. I want extra calamari. So the idiot, the high school student taking the order, says, all right, no clams, extra calamari. I said, then I want a lot of bread. Then I want broccoli, no butter. I want Brussels sprouts, no butter. But I'm going to have someone go pick it up for me. An hour later, the food arrives. All clams, no calamari, and no bread. One slice of stale bread. So I was so upset. It was late. It was almost 10 o'clock. I started eating. But it starts to gall me. So I call up in the middle of eating with the dog looking at me. I can't give him any of this food, so I give him a piece of cheese, which he loves. We're sitting there in the dark by the water. And it was enjoyable. I mean, don't get me wrong. But if I say no clams, because I have to throw them out because I don't like clams. And I only like the other stuff, a shrimp and a calamari. So they give me the opposite. I call up and I try to explain it to her. It's a chain called Pasta Pomodoro. I mean, I'm not ashamed to tell you because it's too many times already the same thing. Too many times the same thing. And they have high school students taking the order. So I said to the manager what went on. She said, oh, I can't imagine she would do that. I said, yeah, but she also told the person who picked it up for me that there was no bread left. She said, I can't imagine that. We got loads of bread. So I said, well, what is she, crazy, stupid, a sadist? How could you run a restaurant like this? I said, you know, I'm getting so mad at you by you giving me these answers that I'm thinking of doing like the dry cleaner lawsuit where that, remember that lawyer sued the dry cleaner for like $8 million for a pair of pants? I almost understand what happened. He snapped, probably. I said, if you keep this up, I said, I'm going to sue you for false advertising. If how many times have I said to you, no clams, extra calamari, and make sure you put bread in the thing and you send no bread? Maybe the fifth time in a row now? And I hung up on him. So this is what goes on. You know what it is? It's not her or the restaurant. You know what I found out lately? Nobody listens to anybody about anything. Have you noticed that in America today? It's in the service area, the service industries. Nobody listens to anybody. They don't want to hear you. They hate you. And it's not like my fault that I'm calling in an order. It doesn't make me a rich guy and that person poor. All I'm doing is ordering a schmucky takeout dinner alone in a house in an undershirt with a dog because that's where I want to be. Why can't they get it right? They always have to, like, give you something wrong. Is it the Bay Area? I want to know. I'm going to put a – is this going on across America where no matter what you say to anybody in a service industry, they do it wrong on purpose? Nobody wants to do anything right. I've never seen anything like this. There's an anger. There's a subtext of anger by everybody. Is it any wonder that I take such pleasure in a simple creature like a dog? No. It's no wonder. Houston, Texas. Chris, you're on the Savage Nation.
I'm a proud father of a five-year-old, and I'm looking to get him a companion, a dog. And I want
you
to tell me the story of how you met Teddy. And
you have to get him. I'll tell you, you could never do better than a small poodle. A miniature poodle, a 10-pounder. The little ones are too little for a child, I think. Like the 2-pounders, the child could accidentally hurt. But a 10- or 11-pound dog at full, you know, full weight for a child, there's nothing better. This is like, I look at this dog sometimes, I think it's a living teddy bear. No matter what mood I'm in, Chris, as a grown man, he's the teddy bear I wanted to have when I was a child that my father wouldn't let me have because only sissies had teddy bears. You know what I'm saying?
Yes, sir, I do.
He wouldn't let me have a teddy bear. Ah, you don't need a teddy bear. You go to your girl. Girls have dolls. You don't need a teddy bear. But Teddy is a living teddy bear. Sometimes he rolls on his back, looks at me in the eyes, with his eyes, and I can't explain it. Dogs have ways about it. That's how they get away with not working for a living. All they do is look cute. But he's a great dog. That breed is smart. He's very good with children. He likes children. I've never heard a bad thing with him. Maybe he's a special one. I don't know. This dog was picked off the internet from a breeder in Tennessee, believe it or not, and shipped out by plane. Would you believe it?
No, sir, I wouldn't, really. Off the internet.
No, you wouldn't believe it. On the internet. I wouldn't know whether to recommend it or not. I really do think you need to look at the animal you're going to buy because you don't know. But let's just talk breeds, Chris. How old is your child?
5 years old, sir.
Oh, he's perfect for a dog. This is just the age. The child will learn that the dog is hungry like you, so you have to feed him every day. The dog gets dirty like a person does, so you have to bathe him and you have to brush him. And the dog sometimes doesn't feel good, you have to hold him. You know, because that's how a child learns. How do they learn otherwise? Otherwise, there's no way for them to learn. So I would recommend Teddy. I mean, you can't have my dog.
You're listening to an encore broadcast of the Michael Savage Show. Listening to an encore broadcast of the Michael Savage Show.
Tell me whether this applies to you. It doesn't matter what your religion is. Listen to this one. A man who chases after fame and wealth and love affairs is like a child who licks honey from the blade of a knife. While he is tasting the sweetness of honey, he has to risk hurting his tongue. He is like a man who carries a torch against the strong wind. The flame will surely burn his hands and face. People love their egoistic comfort, which is a love of fame and praise. But fame and praise are like incense that consumes itself and soon disappears. If people chase after honors and public acclaim and leave the way of truth, they are in serious danger and will soon have cause for regret. It's beautiful poetry, I got to tell you that, and it's universal in the sense that it crosses over to whatever your religious orientation may be. Even if you're an atheist, you can find these rules somewhat reasonable to live by, unless you don't believe in any rules at all because you're so wild and free. We understand that. We understand that people who are not religious are just wild and free, and they're so progressive in their freedom and their liberation. As George Orwell said, he said, the more people chant about their freedom and how free they are, the more loudly he hears their chains rattling. A scripture that is not read with sincerity soon becomes covered with dust. Who does that sound like? You remember the stage Bibles of the Clintons? You remember that overly large Bible that they used to use on Sundays that was made for them in Hollywood on a Hollywood set? I mean, it was like 1.5 to 2.5 times the size of an ordinary Bible. The cross was so big you couldn't miss it from 100 yards away. A scripture that is not read with sincerity soon becomes covered with dust. A house that is not fixed when it needs repairing becomes filthy. So an idle man soon becomes defiled. Why do you think each nation, each people, and each religion had these writings? What is the purpose of any of this? It's their guidances. If you were just left to your wants and to your needs and what you're moaning about, oh, I don't have this, oh, I don't have that, oh, I don't have an airplane, oh, I don't have a girlfriend, oh, I don't have 10 girlfriends, oh, I don't have a house in Aspen next to Dianne Feinstein, the war prophet here, oh, I'm not here, oh, I'm not invited there. You're gonna just moan and groan your whole way through life. So you have to understand that there are millions, tens of millions of people like you on the earth right now going through exactly the same moanings and groanings, and that you have to find your way out of it without taking a pill, without dosing yourself up on a bicycle ride. There's nothing wrong with taking a pill if you need it or taking a bicycle ride. Trust me on that one. But that's not the point. That shouldn't be your only way out of a problem. If man is anything, is a creature of reason. Do you understand what I'm saying to you? How do you define man? Man is an animal who reasons? I've seen that if you're a pure materialist. Let's say you don't believe in God or creator. So you're into mechanism. So you say, well, we're only animals. You have an animal body. But you have to admit that we are an animal who reasons. So therefore, if a man reasons or a man can reason, then he can think his way out of almost any problem that he puts himself in. All these problems, by the way, are temporal small problems, these wants and these needs. You know, you should, if you thought yourself into them, you could be able to think your way out of them. And so you can't do it on your own. You could try it on your own, but you're probably not going to be able to succeed. So that's when people start to turn to the scriptures, or they turn to the teachings of Buddha, or they turn to a religion, or they turn to Zen Buddhism, or they turn to what's this now? You see the people twisted up in studios all over America. What's that? Yoga. Half of them are ex-nymphomaniacs trying to control their bodies through various postures. I have sympathy for them. I understand that. To me, it all looks like a burlesque when I look into a yoga studio. I feel like I'm from another planet. I bicycle by, I look in. I mean, it looks like a burlesque to me. If you're doing yoga, why do you have to wear a costume that shows your private parts to everyone in the room? Can't you do yoga wearing something that's a little more dignified, I ask myself? I mean, if it's purely for the spirit, to get control of the spirit, what are they wearing? A show-all pair of tights, and they're on their hands and knees. I just ask myself if it's what they say it is. So you have to find the answer somewhere else than in your own head. In other words, yes, we are creatures and we are animals that reason, so we can use reason to get out of any hole that we find ourselves in. But we don't have to write the scripture to get us out of that hole. Let's go to the people who thought this through like 10,000 years ago, 5,000 years ago, 1,000 years ago. We don't need some shyster who was on Oprah to get us out of it. He probably stole it from one of these books anyway and repackaged it. You may as well go back to the original guys who wrote this stuff. To conquer oneself is a greater victory than to conquer thousands in a battle. Think about that one. I can never understand that one. If a man's pointing a gun at you, I really don't have time for that one. Or if a man wants to do you harm, let's put it to you that way. I mean, still sleep with the doors locked and the alarm on and the guns loaded with the dog's ears. I don't trust that much in it, you know. Now, here's the last one of this preachy stuff today. This is from the teaching of Buddha. And the reason I'm reading it is not because I'm a Buddhist, but because the poor people of Burma are. And so here's another one of the practical guides that perhaps one of them read. The duty of a ruler is to protect his people. How's that for a starter, Mr. Bush? The duty of a ruler is to protect his people. Many of us would say he is. Okay. He is the parent of his people and he protects them by his laws. Well, when he says children's learn, we start to wonder what kind of parent he might be. He must raise his people, like parents raise their children. Giving a dry cloth to replace a wet one without waiting for the child to cry. In like manner, the ruler must remove suffering and bestow happiness without waiting for people to complain. Indeed, his ruling is not perfect until his people abide in peace. They are his country's treasure. I love that one. The people are a nation's treasure. You hear what I'm saying to you? We are the treasure of America. You and I are the treasure of America, not the senators, not the congressmen, not the media pimps. We are the treasure of America. So they go and they say, therefore, a wise ruler is always thinking of his people and does not forget them even for a moment. Wouldn't you like to believe that? Wouldn't you like to wake up or go to sleep knowing that your wise rulers are always thinking of you and doesn't forget you for a moment other than how to deceive you and to fleece you? He thinks of their hardships and plans for their prosperity. To rule wisely, he must be advised about everything, about water, about drought, about storm, about rain. He must know about crops, the chances for a good harvest, people's comforts and their sorrows. You see that one? To be in a position to rightly award, punish, or praise, he must be thoroughly informed as to the guilt of bad men and the merits of good men. It's an interesting thing about rulers in here. And I don't want to read any more because I think you got the picture. And that's why I've touched on various religious books. Doesn't mean you have to become the person. When you hear these people say that they're the wrong gender trapped in a body, for example, the current psychosis amongst the transgendered crowd is that they're a woman trapped in a man's body, so they're going to go to a surgeon to cut off their penis, for example. To me, that's total insanity. The doctor should be arrested for malpractice, and the person who thinks that should be given antipsychotic medication or put into a mental ward. Never in history has a man awakened and said, I'm a woman in a man's body. Never. This is propaganda. There may have been homosexuals on Earth from the beginning of time, and there will be homosexuals on Earth till the end of time. We understand that. But to say that you're a woman in a man's body, can't you just be a man who likes men? Why must you say you're a woman in a man's body? Where'd that come from? That comes from the psychosis of the psychiatric movement, who has convinced thousands of marginally sane people that they're a man woman, born in a woman's body. But just as I can read Buddhism, I don't have to be a Buddhist. I don't have to say I'm a Buddhist trapped in an American's body. You don't have to become a Buddhist to read the Buddhist tractates. You don't have to shift religions just to read the other religion's books. You don't have to say now I'm trapped in the wrong religion. You were born in a religion. That's the religion that's right for you. It's genetic. It's part of your genetic code. Your parents were that religion, and going back unto how many generations was that your religion? It's in your genetic code. It's encoded within your mind and your psyche. And you're never going to find peace in another religion. Never. Never. You're always going to be confused. You may find temporary peace by saying, oh, I am a Buddhist. You've seen these Americans walking around. They don't even know what Buddhism means. They use it as a form of ego pride. They're trying to show they're different than you, better than you, that they've evolved from, let's say, Catholicism into Buddhism. Now, the first teaching of Buddhism would tell you that you can't use a religion as a matter of pride, as the Iranian-Persian pimp did. He used his religion as a matter of pride. He was misusing his own religion. He was misusing his own religion by bashing us over the head with it, over the heads with it, and saying, the world will not be peaceful till you all accept my religion. Well, to me, that's the mark of a person who doesn't even understand his own religion. Can't pick up your religious book and say, you must be like me and you must follow my religion or there'll be no peace on earth. You're abusing your religious teachings. It's the opposite of your religion to do that. But nobody said that to him. Bush had the chance to do that in the UN. He's our leader. He could have gotten up there and he could have said 10 things that we would have remembered. He could have had somebody write a speech for him that said that we have a visitor to America today who is using his religion in a prideful manner, trying to tell us that unless we convert to his religion, there'll be no peace on earth. This is an act of a lowly man who is hostile to the rest of the world, and it has no place in the United Nations where humanism and humanitarianism should prevail, not threats. He could have said that. The world would have stood up and cheered. They would have said, what got into him? Who wrote that speech for him? Who is Bush's speechwriter? What has happened to the speechwriting profession? Have they all become webmasters and bloggers? Where are they? Does anyone write for this guy? Play the Bush speech. I want to see who wrote this one for him.
As yesterday's positive report card shows, children do learn when standards are high and results are
children do
measured.
Learn. He's lecturing children in America on education. He says children do learn. Now, you could laugh at it and say he gets tongue-tied. I'm sorry. He's the president of the United States? Communication skills are essential to be a president. If a president can't communicate, what can he do? It's not funny anymore. It's an embarrassment. It's embarrassing to listen to this. And that's part of the problem. It goes back to the core statement that I made on today's program, is that national pride has never been this low in my lifetime. I've never seen national pride at this low point. We are at the lowest point of national pride that I can ever remember. Tell me if I'm wrong. Can you remember a day that national pride was lower than it is today? On 9/12/01, it was higher than it is today. The day after we were hit by the Islamic murderers, the nation was very proud because we knew we were going to fight back and we were going to beat them. Now, we haven't beaten them for all the reasons that we know to be in play, but we were proud to be Americans that day. We all came together. We're proud of the day after we were hit than we are today. We have a leader who is inarticulate. We have an opposition party that is simply mean-spirited and grubby, that all they want to do is take as much money from the national treasury as they can with earmarks. And we, the people who are the true pride of the nation and the true treasure of the nation, are left without anyone at the helm. Who is at the helm? There is no helm at all. And that's where we sit today, and I'll be right back.
You're listening to an encore broadcast of The Michael Savage Show.
Savage.
You're listening to an encore broadcast of The Michael Savage Show.
It's apparent to me that this war is not going right, that it was the greatest military campaign on the ground that I've seen in my lifetime. Now, even though the Red Diaper Dopa babies try to undermine the war from day one, and all of their initial predictions were wrong, they said that wait till we get into Baghdad, in the street-to-street fighting, our men will be decimated because the Iraqis know the back alleys better than our men do. They were wrong. Remember when our supply lines were being picked apart, they predicted that our supply lines would be cut. That never happened. They said all of the oil wells would go up in smoke. That never happened. They were giving the enemy fuel, in other words, to defeat America. But now, finally, the New York Times and their fellow travelers have seen the light, and they recognize that their time is now. And with a little help from their demon cat buddies like Ted Kennedy, they're having a shooting gallery against our men, a shooting gallery of insane liberalism in a time of war. Aren't you glad you listened to Bill Clinton and Doris Meisner? Don't you feel great knowing that America is now a multi-culti melting pot that looks much like the United Nations instead of like America? Don't you feel better now? Well, maybe you do, maybe you don't. Liberalism has done it to us. Foolish kind of compassion has done it to us. I'm a very compassionate person, but I'm a rational compassionate person. I'm not an irrationally compassionate person. I'm a very judgmental person, but I'm not a mean judgmental person. There's a large difference between judgmentalism that is rational and judgmentalism that is irrational. Liberalism is an irrational judgmentalism directed at those who do not fit into the doxy of liberalism. I face it every day of my life. People who think that they're enlightened progressives are some of the smallest-minded, meanest people I've ever met on the planet. They would have been very, very happy under Joseph Stalin, where there was a very narrow band of accepted behavior and accepted politics. And either you were in the party, the Communist Party, at that time, or you were not, and therefore you were their enemy. Today, either you are in the Liberal Party and you agree that bird rights are wonderful, water rights are wonderful, all rights are wonderful except the rights of total liberty. Accept the rights of Christianity, accept the rights of the real family, accept the rights to pledge allegiance to the flag of the United States of America, one nation under God, indivisible with justice for all. That's a threat to this small doxied group. They live in their small little world thinking that they're so large and so progressive. But we won't go into pessimism right now. We'll just continue to fight the good fight and hope for the best. The fact of the matter is we have a war on our hands. And the war is a very divisive issue, just as the left has wanted it to become from the beginning. They don't care about the liberation of 24 million people. They don't care that there were 1 million corpses in shallow graves. They don't care that women were raped at their own wedding. They don't care that people were mutilated and maimed. All they care about is getting Bush out of office. That's all they care about. That's all it is all about. And if they can get a side action, a side benefit of debasing the American military at the same time, so much the better.
Savage.
Who can forget one-arm Frank's horrible breath while making love by the sewer plant, or me getting dead man's pants, or me eating a diet that would kill, I don't know, anybody, or how about Tippy the dog being thrown in a garbage truck after he died, or me reading when pasta was spaghetti, or the electric blue saddle-stitched pants that were ripped off my legs, or my silent brother. They are all in Psychological Nudity, my new autobiography. Go to michaelsavage.com and order it now to make sure you reserve a copy. Psychological Nudity. A one-armed Frank level Hal. Did I ever tell you about one-armed Frank? You haven't heard the one-armed Frank story. Do I have a moment? My father, I told you, was an antique dealer. May he rest in peace. So we would come home from... Well, he had a guy who came in with one arm. I don't know how the guy became one arm. But he, you know, you didn't know a lot of people with one arms in those days. Even today, they have I guess you don't know one-arm people today, they have a fake arm. But he had the arm sewed up, you know, in a suit. So, all right, you accept him. His name, though, was One-Arm Frank. Because nobody hid reality in those days. Today, it's like, oh, yeah, he's normal. He's just like a... In those days, it was One-Arm Frank. Today, it's like, oh, he's better than normal, man. He's special. Like, if you have one arm, you're better than a guy with two arms today. You know what I mean? If you have no arms and no legs, you're Superman in the politically correct world of today. But in those days, if you were missing an arm, that's what you would name, One-Arm Frank. Whatever your anomaly was, that was your name. It made it easier for the average person to remember everybody. So One-Arm Frank was a very sweet guy, but a breath on him. Now, I want to tell you, there are bad breaths, then there are very bad breaths, then there are medicinal problems. This had to be solved with a medicine that hasn't been invented yet. It was wintertime, and once in a while, my old man would drive One-Arm Frank home, and I'd get stuck in the back, and One-Arm Frank would get shotgun. Now, I want to tell you something. It could be -4 degrees in New York. You had to ride with all the windows open. Did you ever have a person like this, Greg? I'm serious, where it's medicinally like a medical problem, where he says anything and the car fills with a noxious fume where you don't know what to do. You know, are we going past the Trun's meat factory? No, we're not in Williamsburg. Did we run over a small furry creature that got caught in the muffler and shot up through the floorboard? Did I step on something on the way? No, it's Frank talking.
You're listening to an encore broadcast of The Michael Savage Show.